Well, Nick, after a 10-9 loss to the Yankees, the Jays are now 10-11 during spring training. I don't know about you. Like, I think they falling to 10-11 during the regular season would be one thing, but it hits a little different during spring training, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because if you watch this game in the regular season with all the unanswered runs and then the late loss, you could be like, this is an incredibly captivating game. And then suddenly this is a huge disappointment. As you said, it just hits a little bit differently when you're less aware of the players involved. That doesn't mean that important things didn't happen in this game, which is what we're going to talk about, some of the individual players and how their performances matter. But the intensity in the game itself feels a bit different.
That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We also are streaming live on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You want to shoot us a text? You are certainly welcome to do so. 590-590. Please leave your name and location. The People's Text Line is always open, and we ask your name and location so we can give you a shout out whenever you do send in your thoughts and observations about this one. And really, it doesn't have to be, Nick, only about this game. It could be about anything on your mind regarding the Blue Jays so far this spring, how things might shake out as we get closer to opening day, which is on March 28th, so not too far away for everyone. So again, 590-590, name and location, and we'll take your texts on the People text line. I mentioned in the pregame show to you that the bat path for Dalton Varsho has been largely modeled on him trying to chop down trees. That's kind of how he got his offseason started. Dalton Varsho has looked very good so far this spring. And today he added a hit off of Clay Holmes. He had three stolen bases. We were talking during the game. I'm not sure how much you need to be like really wildly stealing bases in the spring, but hey, he's looked pretty good so far. I've been pretty impressed by what we've gotten from Varsho.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting a hit off an elite level reliever like Clay Holmes is always a good sign. The stolen bases, as you said, I don't really get that. I guess there's an element of getting into a rhythm with that component of your game. At the same time, you kind of want pitchers to think you aren't going to steal, and you kind of don't want to risk injuries. And by attempting multiple steals in the same game, you're not doing either of those things. And also another walk. So we're talking about 8 walks against 2 strikeouts over the spring for Dalton Varsho. And if he can keep the walks up and the strikeouts down, he is someone who does have the ability to yank that ball, hit home runs over the right field wall. And you don't want to get too excited about spring results sometimes, but at the same time, he looks like a better hitter than we saw for much of 2023.
Yeah, it does look like the process for Varsho has... I don't know if it's like necessarily slowed down, because I think the only person who can answer that is probably Varsho himself, but it does look like he is simply more comfortable at the plate. And like, to your point, a lot of walks so far this spring, 8 you mentioned, and not a lot of strikeouts, does mean at least it process wise, it feels like he is seeing things a little better. Cause it just felt like last year, it felt like we just saw way too many swinging through hittable pitches. Not only, and it's not just a Varsho thing, I'm not picking on the guy, because Vladdy did it at times, Springer did it at times, Kirk did it at times. So it's not something that you can only pin on Varsho, certainly, but that he is not doing it, and again, to your point, spring results are what they are, but that he is where he is now on March 16th, I think it is promising, considering I think a lot of what you're going to talk about this coming season, Nick, and gosh, I've done it so much this season already, like in this past spring, that a lot of what you're talking about as the positives are bounce backs for guys who had negative seasons last year. And Varsho is one of those guys for whom it'll be really important.
Yeah, it's easy to look at the names on the page and assume that the results are going to be the same, because it's natural to say, oh, that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That's what he does. That's Dalton Varsho. That's what he does. And we know how much performances fluctuate. Like, Vladdy is a perfect example, right? Vladdy is a guy who has played at a near MVP level, and he's also played at a kind of decent starting first baseman kind of level. Yeah. And so when you have the same group of players, it does not mean that you are fated to have the same set of results. And when it comes to the Blue Jays, guys like Varsho, Kirk, Springer, and Guerrero, there are a number of players who you would project, and not even kind of rose-colored glasses, hoping things are going to be good, in terms of sort of the raw, cold-blooded projections for these players, are going to be better than what we saw last season. The results are not guaranteed to follow, but in terms of our best guesses through these projections, there's a good chance they will be.
I see a text here on the text line. Again, 590-590, name and locations. You can certainly send those in over the next half an hour. We'll be here until the spring breakout game begins, and we'll send you back to Ben and Chris. But Greg from Hamilton says, this team will start and end with RBI production. Things are looking good with the option of Votto. What are your thoughts on Aurelvis Martinez this year? You know, it's funny. At the beginning of the spring, I had thought we'd see more from Aurelvis Martinez because he was the highest ranked position player prospect, because, of course, Tiedemann is the highest prospect overall. But from a position player standpoint, it was Martinez for a chunk of time. And I guess we saw some flashes of him at the plate, and I was largely looking for what you might get out of Martinez footwork wise, but he didn't really show a lot more, Nick, in the spring, unfortunately. I think he's already been sent back down to like the minor league camp, so to speak. He's not even in, I don't think, unless they've changed things. He's not in the starting lineup for the spring breakout game. Doesn't mean he won't play in that game, but I was somewhat surprised to not see his name next to like the second or third base marker for that spring breakout lineup.
Yeah, he's someone who's actually flashed more in previous springs than he did this year. In terms of what he could bring, you know, in the nearish future, he's someone who doesn't have a ton of experience at AAA yet. And his pattern throughout his career has actually been quite consistent, where he has been elevated levels and he has tended to struggle early on and have an adjustment period and right. Then figure it out and progress. And that has, you know, slowed him down to some extent. You know, he's still young. It's not like he's been rotting in the minors forever, anything like that. But he is someone who it's been clear that he needs time to figure out each level he's at. And as a result, he probably is going to need more time at AAA for you to feel comfortable with him contributing at the big league level. At the same time, in terms of raw power, this is a really impressive prospect. And, you know, the texter mentions driving in runs has been an issue for the Blue Jays in 2023. Some of that is luck-based, you might say, and some weird sequencing. But power was not a huge strength of this team last year, and this is a guy who looks like he's going to deliver power at the major league level. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, he has, just from what we've seen early in the spring, and again, he didn't play today, but he has effortless power. And I think he's kind of started his minor league career off with a less than anticipated start, in the sense like it didn't go very well for him to start things off. And then, like you were saying, he kind of picked things back up to the point where by the end of the minor league season last year, felt like he was playing pretty consistently, which is why I think I was excited to see him, Nick, this spring. But then unfortunately he has not, he's not played that well where he's going to be at least in the plans of the Blue Jays to start. Could he turn things around and be a late call-up if things go well for him? It's definitely possible, if only because right this second, it doesn't feel like the positions that Aurelvis would play at are not nailed down to the point where you could say, oh, well, just forget about it, right? But we are at the point where there's still a really good chance that one of Biggio or IKF or Schneider or Clement or Espinal or any of these guys are the people in the mix for second and third. But maybe Aurelvis Martinez, maybe post All-Star break, is in that mix, though right this second it feels like that's perhaps a little unlikely.
Yeah, this is a player who has played 55 games at the AAA level, so sometimes you do see top level prospects making that jump incredibly quickly when they, you know, they dominate a level, they show they're ready for the major leagues. The performance you saw from him at AAA last year, there was some compelling power there, but it wasn't quite rising to that standard. And especially with a spring training that hasn't, you know, jumped off the page, he's going to need to show a little bit more. If you want to be very generous about interpreting the Blue Jays offseason this year, which I'm not necessarily sure we should be, but if you want to be extremely generous, you might say that the Blue Jays not getting these locked in guys at those positions, at second base, at third base, leaving it to be a little bit of a mix, is to some degree in anticipation of their young players like Martinez, like Barger, coming through and having a chance to claim that spot. That could be late 2024. That could be more of a 2025 thing. But there is a notion that instead of getting a big-time veteran on a long-term contract, you see the future where these guys are filling into those spots. Remains to be seen whether that's a good idea or not, yeah. But that could be part of their thinking.
I definitely was of the mind early in the spring and even before the spring campaign started that like Jaime Candelario would have been a good bridge option, a quote-unquote bridge option at third. And then he, like, pretty early, actually, in the offseason, signed with the Reds, and he kind of came off the table immediately. And then the next major, like, quote-unquote major, again, use air quotes, major signing for the Blue Jays was IKF. And that also seemed to me to be a bridge deal just until they felt Aurelvis was ready, but it just maybe he is not as close to being ready as prior anticipated, but from the Blue Jays, from fans, et cetera. But he does have some intriguing power, so I do hope we see him sooner rather than later. In today's game, I think one of the questions I had about what we might get from, let's say, a Peyton Henry, wasn't only going to be, Nick, the power or the offensive prowess, because I don't know, you know how much in Danny Jansen's absence, how much can you really expect offensive explosions from your third catcher or your fourth catcher in the organization? Probably not a lot. But Peyton Henry, I was curious to see how he would do defensively as well. And kind of a tough day for him. Kind of a tough day because, so he had the hit for a little dribbler in the first plate appearance. Not a ton to write home about offensively against Luis Gil, but some flubs with Brendan Little on the mound later on in the ball game, a few wild pitches that were not stopped that rolled all the way to the backstop. One of them scoring a run, Zach Pop comes in and a wild pitch gets away from him as well. That scores a second run. And now I know wild pitches are not only on the catcher. They're obviously on the man delivering the pitch on the mound. So that's obviously on Pop and on Brendan Little as well. But that is a tough look for a guy who is actively trying to win a job with an opening now where, you know, in prior days you might have thought, okay, well, I don't have a lot to worry about here.
Yeah, if you are the third catcher in an organization or fighting for that role, at the end of the day, your job is going to be to demonstrate you can handle a pitching staff and you can handle that job defensively. Like sometimes people say a job of a catcher is really to do defense and the offense is secondary, and they go a little bit too far down that road cliche-wise. Right. But if you are the third or fourth catcher, really there's no way it's reasonable to expect offense. Like you are there to be a defensive presence, and letting three balls go by you in a single game is about as disastrous as it can be from that standpoint. As you said, it is not exclusively on the catcher, but I think if you talk to catchers, they feel that it's their responsibility to keep the ball in front of them, basically no matter what happens, unless it's sort of true Rick and Keel type of nonsense. And that's not what we saw today. So it was a tough go for Peyton Henry, and Brian Servan has been kind of outplaying him offensively, and today probably helped him get closer to securing that job with Jansen out.
I see another text here on the text line. There's no name on this one, so please do leave your name when you text in. But Trevor Richards, we didn't see him play today, but the question was, and I did say you could text in about anything, didn't have to be about today's ballgame. Trevor Richards, for much of last year and in spring this year, is concerning. Is he a guarantee to be in the bullpen? Now, with most things, Nick, there are no guarantees in life, but I do think he is pretty close to at least starting the year in the bullpen. I don't know if that necessarily means he's going to end the year in the bullpen, but he's a guy who I think has had enough of a leash, and also is, okay, because the Richards usage last year, he kind of was asked to go multiple innings a lot of times, so he's one of the only guys beyond, let's say, Bowden Francis, who you think is serving as the fifth starter anyways to start the year, so you just take him out of that conversation. So beyond Bowden Francis, the only other guys who really go multiple innings frequently, apart from Richards, I guess Mitch White, I guess, is like the only other guy who like really does that. I guess Jordan Romano sometimes is asked to get like four outs, but he's not exactly the guy who you're throwing in the middle of a game. So he's not a part of that conversation. Yariel Rodriguez, I suppose, could be that guy if he's not a starter, but I don't think we've seen him at all this spring. So it's kind of a tall order to ask him to do that. So I think for a lot of those reasons, the answer is yes. And they also like Richards as the pseudo lefty. Like they don't mind him throwing a lefties with a changeup. So I would say yes, he probably will be in the bullpen to start, but I don't disagree that there's some concerning underlying metrics there where, you know, it's not wrong to be concerned.
It's absolutely right to be concerned. He's not looked good in the spring, and sort of on a per inning basis over the last couple of years, like, he has not done a good job of keeping runs off the board. Like that's the long and short of it. He strikes out a lot of guys. He gives you that multi-inning utility. He has a level of competence against left-handed bats. Like all those things you mentioned are important, but kind of the bottom line results of them are not strong. And he doesn't have options, so you can't keep him in the organization that way. And I think a part of this story is that the other guys who you could in theory bring up have not really knocked on the door in the spring. Like, this hasn't been some amazing spring for the Nate Pearsons, the Zach Pops of the world. I do believe that if Richard pitched the way he's currently pitching and some of the guys a little bit deeper in the organization had given the Blue Jays a reason to really think about this choice and whether they want to keep a hold of Trevor Richards, it would have been possible, maybe not probable, but possible to dislodge him. But the way it's gone in the spring, it's just hard to see that happening.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Like, again, you're not super heartened by what you've gotten from Richards, but like you said, Pop, I mean, we saw Pop pitch in this game. He pitched today and he did not look great. It kind of bums me out a little bit because I've always been a big fan of seeing Canadian ball players do well. And I mean, he's from, I think, Brampton. So I inherently want him to be successful and then doubly so because he's a Blue Jay. But gosh, this is a guy who already only had like a relatively limited, but a pretty high sample of success when he was in the majors. And then basically right after he struggled and then went down to the minors and then also struggled to the point where he just never got called back up. And now here we are. So you're right. Pearson and Pop. And I mean, Mitch White can throw a little harder, it seems, but is that enough to change your mind completely on any of those guys, including Richards? Probably not. Chad Green has looked a little shaky so far this spring. Tim Mazza looked shaky yesterday, although it was a one-off, and I wonder if he was kind of gutting through some things. So, you know, you take everything with a grain of salt in the spring, but the bullpen, the regulars out of the bullpen have looked a little shaky for names you are familiar with, and not like Mason Fluharty. We're not talking about him. We're mostly talking about guys most people have seen for large chunks of major league action.
Yeah, and even the unfamiliar names too. Like, you know, Connor Cook was a guy who had a little bit of buzz coming into camp. Like Danner, we saw today, he did not pitch well. You know, Yasir Zulueta is someone who's been a little bit of a favorite of mine to watch for the last couple of years and had kind of mythical stuff there for a little bit where he was getting some hype and the results have not followed. So there just is this cohort of like, here are some interesting arms, most of whom can throw pretty hard. And you sort of figure that one or two of these guys might break through and just nobody has. And that leaves you with a situation where Richards is probably in there. You could see Mitch White being in there as well, even with Richards. Yeah. And
no options for White either.
Yeah. So that is probably not what the Blue Jays were hoping. They're probably hoping that one of the younger guys with a little bit more potential would show them something that gave them difficult decisions to make. But right now, it doesn't seem like there are too many difficult decisions in the pitching staff.
Yeah. I think it feels like the most difficult decisions are just, When do you ramp up Kevin Gausman? And like, what's going on with Alek Manoah? It's a lot of like the larger picture questions, it feels like. John Schneider did talk about those things. He also talked about Alejandro Kirk and what Kirk's workload would look like in the absence of Danny Jansen. So we'll play a little bit of that audio after the break. We'll also go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. We've answered a couple of your texts already. There's a couple more here. So after the break, more texts. We'll hear from Schneider. And I do want to chat with you, Nick, about the idea of those last three spots for position players. Vogelbach's in the mix, obviously. Espinal is in the mix. Schneider, Clement, Biggio. We saw all of these guys at different points today. So lots to come before the spring breakout game gets going in about 20, 25 minutes. You're listening to Jay's Talk Show and Nick on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also streaming live on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Show Ali, Nick Ashbourne here with you until the beginning of spring breakout between the Jays and Yankees down at George M. Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. The Jays do lose 10-9 in game one of our doubleheader here, but we're discussing what we saw and certainly what you are hoping to see from the Blue Jays this spring and this season, respectively. If you want to shoot us a text, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. And like I say, it's always open for your commentary. Nick, I wanted to get to this text from Greg in Hamilton. And Greg asks about Daniel Vogelbach the reason I wanted to get to this is because it kind of ties into something we've talked about before with the last three spots somewhat up for grabs, right? Because if you think and I'm going to read Greg's text here in 2 seconds, but if you think 13 spots are reserved for hitters and 10 of those are taken up by Bo, Vladdy, Springer, Turner, Kirk, Varsho, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio, and catcher number 2, because Danny Jansen is going to start the year on the IL, then you have 3 spots remaining. If you think it's going to be 13 and 13 for the 26-man active roster, you have 3 spots to divvy up between Clement, Espinal, Schneider, Vogelbach, Escobar, Votto. And I would probably say at least right this second, Nathan Lucas is at least in the mix, although it feels like he is not atop this battle, but he's played pretty well so far this spring. But that is still 7 guys that you could pick, that you have to pick 3 spots for. And Greg's text was, what are the Jays seeing Vogelbach? He will hit 200 with rare power. Why would they take a $2 million option for Vogelbach? Which I think is a valid question. We were talking before in the pregame about Vogelbach's usage and like pinch hitter, largely will see time at the DH spot and so on. And I wonder where you're at now, if anything's changed. I mean, one game will probably never change anyone's opinion wholeheartedly, but where are you at on the 3 spots and whether or not Vogelbach takes up one of those spots?
I think that Daniel Vogelbach suffers from the fact that Blue Jays fans remember his brief cameo as a Blue Jay and he really struggled. And, you know, he's got the Alejandro Kirk shape where potentially people don't give him the benefit of the doubt. Realistically, this is a guy who can do a very good job against right-handed pitching. Like last year, he had 13 home runs in 303 plate appearances against right-handed pitching, which is basically all you're going to use him against. We saw him against a lefty in this game today, but that's just not the way it's going to work. You're going to pick and choose your spots with him. And if lefties come in to face him, to be honest, you're going to pinch hit somebody else. So that kind of power and the ability to get on base, you know, I think it was a 353 on base percentage against those right-handed pitchers. It's not so easy to find a guy who can be at a well above average hitter against the most common type of pitcher in the game. Now, he does not have any kind of defensive value whatsoever. But as we discussed prior to the game, the Blue Jays have so many pieces that they can move around that it's easier for them to compensate for that than maybe it would be for some other teams where a lot of the players are really locked in. I'm not trying to make a case that Daniel Vogelbach is a star or an average starter even. What I am saying is that if you have 13 position players and he's kind of number 13 on that list, which is basically where he would be, I think that's fairly reasonable.
You're probably right, right? And I think his presence on the roster, and again, things can change in the next, 12 days, but his presence on the roster will likely be affected in some way, shape, or form by whatever Joey Votto does. Whatever he does. Like, if he doesn't, Votto doesn't play well, Vogelbach's spot is maybe a teensy bit more secure. If Votto, and the news was from Jason Stark that, and we heard this earlier in the week, but Jason Stark said yesterday that it seems pretty likely Votto will play tomorrow. There's split squad action tomorrow going on, and that Votto will play in Clearwater, which is a bit of a bummer because I don't know, selfishly, I want Votto to play in our game. So we can talk about Joey Votto. But if that does happen and he plays well, that's at least one more step towards Votto potentially being the guy they take instead of Vogelbach. It's just much like we've talked about this before, but I mean, there's no guarantee that Votto plays well. And you brought up the example of Vladimir Guerrero, I guess now senior, and getting the cup of coffee with the Blue Jays and never really making the active roster. So like that could happen to Votto. It could. But also if he plays well, then we're having a different conversation about Vogelbach being like the 13th guy, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason Joey Votto advised people not to buy his jersey, because there is there's a very plausible scenario where he never appears as a Toronto Blue Jay. I don't think that's what people listening want to see. I don't think that's what you or I want to see. He's a fascinating player. He's an important player in league history, Hall of Fame type credentials, someone from the area. There's so many reasons to want to see Joey Votto play, even though we all know that he is past the point of being that difference maker that he once was. You know, crazier things have happened than a guy bouncing back. He was a very good hitter as recently as 2021. Maybe they do catch lightning in a bottle with him, but yeah, we're talking about the very bottom of the roster here, and you're talking about a left-handed pinch hitter who faces right-handed pitching. It would be cool if that guy was Joey Votto, and I don't think he has to do too much to get to that place. I don't think it's going to be opening day because there's not a lot of time between now and then for him to ramp up, But realistically, if he can go to the minor leagues or in the rest of spring and show that he hasn't kind of just lost it at the most fundamental level,
yes,
then it seems likely that he's going to get a chance. And the fact that Vogelbach potentially, and he's not a lock either, but potentially the fact that Vogelbach played for the 2024 Toronto Blue Jays is something that could be very easily erased by history.
Yeah, it might end up being like a very fun, immaculate grid entry for Daniel Vogelbach in a couple of years when he, you know, you write down his name, it's like Mets, Blue Jays. Oh, Daniel Vogelbach, you write that one in there. Joey Votto too. I wonder on Votto because, like you said, maybe they do catch lightning in a bottle with him, and he plays well. It's just he did have a number of hits last year. But again, it was such a small sample size that I do wonder if that's going to continue being the case this season. But I don't know. I am very much looking forward to seeing Votto in some way, shape, or form, just because it's kind of exciting. Do you think, I'm just curious, it's nothing to do with today's game, but do you think Votto is a first ballot Hall of Famer? I do tend to agree that he has the credentials to get into the Hall of Fame eventually. It's just the threshold for being a first ballot Hall of Famer in baseball is so high. It's like much higher than it is in the NFL or the NBA or even the NHL. It's like pretty high for baseball. And I kind of wonder if he might not get in on the very first ballot. He'll get in eventually, I do think.
Yeah, I think that there is some reason for people to be skeptical, because if you are less statistically inclined, like, he is someone who won with rate stats. He won by being an on-base guy, by right, being a guy who scored runs, and he's got good home run totals, but there's plenty of guys who have better home run totals. He played first base, so people aren't going to be amazingly impressed by what he offered to the game on the defensive side, even though he was very good at his position at times. And so I think there are some voters who will say the kind of counting numbers are not unbelievable. The impact in terms of postseason and team success is not unbelievable. And it's also worth remembering that we're recording this from Toronto. And so in this place, his stature is going to be greater than it is in a lot of other places. And he's probably not as front and center in people's mind in certain other markets than he would be here. I personally believe that he's a Hall of Famer based on his accomplishments. I think he's one of the greatest hitters of his era. That's not really a hot take. But at the same time, I could see kind of more old school voters in different markets finding a reason to say no, at least early on.
Yeah, maybe the hot spots for voters in favor will be in Cincinnati and Toronto. And maybe we'll have to see where else, certainly. But I agree. I think he will get in. I have my doubts about the first ballot, just because, I don't know, like the baseball hall. And I say this with love for baseball as a whole, but like, it can be a little snooty sometimes. And I wonder if that'll work against Joey Votto, perhaps. To wrap up on the 13 hitters, how do you fill out the last three spots conversation? So you said Vogelbach. We got to see Clement, Biggio, Schneider, and Escobar today. I generally would say that it's over for Escobar.
You can forget, right? Escobar. He's a non-roster invitee who had a pretty brutal spring, and he's coming off a rough year. And, you know, he's shown some quality in the past and maybe latches on another minor league contract, sure, somewhere, and we see him in the future. But as far as these Jays are concerned, it's his road is pretty hard to see.
So if you're leaving out, then, for the purposes of these last two spots, if we say Votto is going to at least start the season in the minors, because I do remember a conversation John Schneider had with the media when they were asking him about the ramp up for Kiermaier and Springer as two other veterans. And he said, yeah, with all our guys, it takes about a week for them to get into actual game shape. And, you know, another week after that for them to get really build up their routines, the positions they play, and Kiermaier and Springer playing the field all the time, versus Votto, who probably won't. He'll play at the field sometimes, but certainly not as much as those two. So it might be a shorter ramp up for Votto, but if he's saying it's like essentially 2 weeks to fully ramp up from the time they get in a game, well, there's only 12 days until opening day. So the math doesn't math there necessarily for Votto. So if we're saying Votto is going to start the season, barring some miraculous turnaround in the next 12 days, starts with the Bisons. We've already talked about Vogelbach occupying one of those three spaces, and Escobar is not in the conversation, then that essentially leaves you with Clement, Biggio, Espinal, and I guess Nathan Lucas. And maybe we can also X out Nathan Lucas for now, just because of, I think some, the things he does might also be taken up by Schneider, who can play multiple positions outfield, infield. So you're essentially now narrowing it two spots to Clement, Biggio, Schneider, Espinal, essentially. So pardon me, not Biggio. Clement, Espinal, and Schneider, because we said Biggio was a lock already.
Yeah, Biggio is safe. I like Davis Schneider. The only argument against keeping Davis Schneider would be we're worried about how many at-bats we can get him, and we think more highly of him that he can be a full-time player, and we want to give him that opportunity in AAA. I'm not sure he's that type of guy, based on his age, based on what he's already accomplished at AAA. I think if he can help your major league team, you bring him up. He's got power. He can play in the outfield against left-handed pitchers when you want to sit one or both of Varsho. What he accomplished as a rookie was very impressive. So he's someone I feel good about, and that just kind of makes it a Clement Espinal thing. And Clement's the guy without options, so that often makes a decision in and of itself, whether it should or not. And he looks like the more pure backup shortstop to me at this point. And he simply cannot be struck out, which is a good tool to have as a player. He's got, I think, 33 plate appearances in the spring with zero strikeouts. A guy who is always putting the ball in play and offers defensive value across the diamond. I know there's not really power there, but that's still a handy player to have.
It is. It absolutely is. And I would probably pick Schneider and Clement as well, because if Biggio's on the roster, I just foresee a scenario in which you could have essentially Schneider and Clement be, and Espinal is the one sent down. You could have Schneider and Clement be your platoon situation at second base, with Schneider on days where he's not playing second, go out into the outfield to relieve guys, or just sit if he just needs a day off or whatever. And IKF will likely get the lion's share of starts at third, I'm guessing. But if you need him to start somewhere else, and he could easily start at short, which is probably not going to happen because Bo plays like 161 games a year, essentially. So that's, you know, he might get a chance there. He probably will get more chances at second as well, because he's a guy who can play anywhere, even in the outfield as well. On days where he's not at third, you could see Biggio do that job also. And again, I don't know if you want to see him all the time at third base, but if he's going to be on the roster, like that could just, those are the scenarios in which I envision those four guys getting most of their playing time at second and third with some time in the outfield, which is why I think I envision them all over Espinal, who can also do that. It feels like he offers you less positional versatility, which is what the Blue Jays value a lot of overall.
Yeah, he's a glove first player who plays a lot of second and third, which, as you mentioned, they've got a lot of players who do that already. And he's someone who regressed defensively and offensively in a pretty significant way last season. They're still might like his track record against left-handed pitching. He's someone who's been, you know, a consistent part of the team for some time. And so there is a little bit of friction when you bring in, you know, someone like Ernie Clement, not that he's some horrible clubhouse presence, but when you take a, you know, well-known, well-liked guy out for somebody else, you know, that whenever you move the status quo in any direction, there is some level of friction associated with that. But at the end of the day, it's just hard for me to cook up in-game scenarios where I want Santiago Espinal in the game. And so as a result, it's hard to justify keeping him on the roster, especially when he's the one who has the option, so you can send him down and hold on to him.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Because he was an all-star not that long ago, 2 years ago. I know, it's kind of
pretty
like a
fraudulent all-star, to be honest.
As the replacement at the end of the roster. But hey, you can never take that away. You can't take that away from Espinal. He'll have that all-star
baseball
next to his name.
It's absolutely wild in terms of who gets to be an all-star, because it's just like, who is good for half a season? Funny. And it's just so volatile. If you go through all-star teams in MLB through history, you will find some truly bizarre names, and Santiago Espinal is among them.
You know who is not a fraudulent all-star is Kevin Gausman. Now, of course, we wanted some updates on Gausman and what's been going on with him. Of course, we haven't seen him pitch in quite some time, and John Schneider pregame did have this update on Kevin Gausman. I wanted to share it with you and chat a little bit about this before we get over to spring breakout.
Feels good, which is, you know, the final step after you get off the mound. So I'm looking for his next time to be in a game. I'm not exactly sure the date yet, but he was feeling good today. So that was a really good day yesterday into today for him.
John, when you spoke about guys yesterday, opening day looks tough, but is it still realistic to get that first trip through the rotation, even if he was number five in line?
That's kind of what we're working through now, kind of waiting and seeing. We still have to build him up quite a bit, you know, whether that's, if he lands in camp at like up to 60 and then he can pitch. without taking away and putting our bullpen, you know, overworked, overtaxed at the beginning of the year. So if it's, you know, at the end of the rotation, probably best case scenario, but we'll see how he is really after the first game and how quickly we can get him ramped up.
Nick, that sounds like a very positive update for the team's ace, I would say.
Yeah, when you're talking about shoulder injuries and you're talking about best case scenarios, those two things are hard to put together in a way that makes sense. Is there a world where he is the fifth, quote unquote, starter and he comes out and he throws 70 pitches and he gives you maybe five innings because he's dealing and Kevin Gausman tends to do that? Sure, but the way Schneider's talking about it, he's giving you a glimpse of what he hopes happens. Mm. And there often is a gap between what one hopes and what actually happens. And I think the Blue Jays are going to fall into that gap with Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I do think, I wonder if he starts the season on the IL. I say probably not, but you at least have Bowden Francis to bridge that gap. We got to get over to spring breakout, Nick, but this was a lot of fun. This is the first of what I hope are many Jays talks with you and I.
Oh, well, thanks for having me around, and I will see you tomorrow. Spoiler alert.
I will see you tomorrow. Appreciate everyone being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Protection. Protect your vehicle from rust today. For a special offer, find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Ed Pandino, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. We're out of here. You'll have the broadcast of the spring breakout game with Ben and Chris. Jays Talk returns tomorrow, again, with Nick and myself. We'll talk to you then.